It's not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You are listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
Well, hello there, everybody. You know, it is definitely December. Winter is rapidly approaching. Officially, what, December 21st, winter solstice, something like that. It's certainly winter season that's out. And with that in mind, keep in mind, during the holiday shopping days, that is also the robbery days. So, pack always, pack ready to use it. So that leads us to what to pack. Well, if you happen to be in a colder weather climate, you can carry what we're looking for, and that is a larger gun that fits the hand well with a caliber that preferably begins with the number 4, as in 40 Smith & Wesson or better, 40, 45, something like that. If you have a 357 Magnum, that'd work fine too. If you have a 9mm, go ahead. You know, it's what you got. But try to upgrade, get a bigger caliber. If nothing else, carry the gun that you're willing to carry every day. Now, I'm a big fan of carrying a full-size gun. However, I also know from personal experience, it's cumbersome. Sometimes I would rather leave my big, heavier gun at home than carry it, just because it can be somewhat problematic. That's fine. As long as you have something else you're willing to carry. Carry something you'll carry every day. If it's a Ruger LCP in 380 Auto, then carry it. And carry it with some good ammo. Good, hot, fast, burning, working ammo. That's the sort of thing to do. This is the holiday season. More personal robberies going on this time of year than any other time of year in this condensed amount of time. From Black Friday through the first of the year. So, be prepared. Keep your heads up. Keep your wits about you. Stay in condition yellow, per the color code of mental awareness by Colonel Jeff Cooper. Keep aware of what's going on. Notice who's around you. Notice where you're going. Park in a good spot. Be in a decently lighted area if you're out when it's dark. Just pay attention. Keep your head on a swivel. And if you see somebody who may be of some sort of interest to you because of their negative vibe, make eye contact and make it as though you recognize them and they know that you are recognizing them. And pack. Pack a gun. If you have a concealed weapons permit, great. If you're carrying open, great. But pack. Okay? That will help keep you safe. Bad guys don't like seeing guns. They don't like seeing people with guns. And if nothing else, they just want to avoid them. So, with that being said, we're going to move on. We're about to head into the break now. And when we come back, we've got a store full of wonderful show and surprises for you coming up, including a piece by Ron Paul, a wonderful piece detailing out the Second Amendment by JFPO. We will hit all of that coming up in the show. So stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in right here to 2A Radio.
You're listening to 2A Radio with Bill Carnes.
Welcome back from the break. Pardon me. I've been suffering from a bit of a cold going on, and I'm trying to fix it. Thank you, Airborne, for trying to keep me alive. We're going to play Peace for You Now by Ron Paul, dealing with a very interesting piece of legislation and the TSA and their invasive nude pictures and their groping. Listen to this.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise this evening to announce that I introduced some legislation today dealing with the calamity that we have found at our airports with TSA. Something has to be done. Everybody's fed up. The people are fed up. The pilots are fed up. I'm fed up. You know, I've come to this floor many times over the past many years and complained about the terrible foreign policy we've had, the terrible monetary policy we had, the excessive spending and the debt, and also the tax policy. But what we're doing and what we're accepting and putting up with at this airport is so symbolic of us just not standing up and saying, enough is enough. I know the American people are starting to wake up, but our government, those in charge, Congress as well as the executive branch, are doing nothing. Yes, they're talking about maybe backing off and allowing the pilots go through. But can you think how silly the whole thing is? The pilot has a gun in the cockpit, and he's managing this aircraft, which is a missile, and we make him go through this groping X-ray exercise, having people feel in their underwear. It's absurd, and it's time we wake up. The bill I've introduced will take care of this. But we have to realize that the real problem is that the American people have been too submissive. We have been too submissive. It's been going on for a long time, and this was to be expected even from the beginning of the TSA. And it's deeply flawed. Private property should be protected by private individuals, not bureaucrats. The bill that I've introduced will take care of it. It's very simple. It's one paragraph long. It removes the immunity from anybody in the federal government that does anything that you or I can't do. If you can't grope another person, if you can't X-ray people and endanger them with possible X-ray, you can't take nude photographs of individuals, why do we allow the government to do it? We would go to jail if an individual, he'd be immediately arrested if an individual citizen went up and did these things. And yet we just sit there and calmly say, oh, they're making us safe. And besides, the argument from the executive branch is that when you buy a ticket, you have sacrificed your rights. And it's the duty of the government to make us safe. That isn't the case. You never have to sacrifice your rights. The duty of the government is to protect our rights, not to use them and do what they have been doing to us. The pilots, hopefully, you know, will be exempted from this. But another suggestion I have that might help us, let's make sure that every member of Congress goes through this. Get the X-ray, take a look, and make them look at the pictures, and then go through one of those groping pat-downs. And then I think there'd be a difference. Have everybody in the executive branch, anybody a cabinet member, make them go through it and look at it. Maybe they would pay more attention. But this, it doesn't work. This is not what makes us safer. This is preposterous to think that the TSA has made us safer. You know, when you think about it, if you look at what's happened over the past 10 years, during this last decade, we lost 3,000 on a terrible, terrible day for America. But since that time, in this last decade, we have also lost 6,000 of our military personnel going over there and trying to rectify this problem. We have lost 400,000 people on our government-run highways. We have lost 150,000 individuals from homicides. So I think there's reason to be concerned, reason to deal with this problem. We're not dealing with the right way. We're doing the wrong thing. And groping people at the airport doesn't solve our problems. What has solved our problems basically has been that they put a good lock on the door and they put a gun inside the cockpit. That's been the greatest boon to our safety. Safety should be the responsibility of the individual and the private property owner. But right now, we assume the government's always going to take care of us, and we are supposed to sacrifice our liberties. I say that is wrong. We are not safer. And we also know there are individuals who are making money off this. Michael Chertoff, here's a guy that was the head of the TSA selling the equipment. And the equipment's questionable. We don't even know if it works, and it may well be dangerous to our health. The way I see this, if this doesn't change, I see what has happened to the American people is we have accepted the notion that we should be treated like cattle. Make us safe, make us secure, put us in the barbed wire, feed us, fatten us up, and then they'll eat us. And we have to wake up and say, we've had it. I think this whole idea of an opt-out day is just great. We ought to opt out and make the point, get somebody to watch it, take a camera. It's time for the American people to stand up, shrug off the shackles of our government at TSA at the airport.
Probably the only statesman left in the U.S. House of Representatives. Soon his son will be joining us in Congress. We'll see how Rand Paul does. Hopefully he follows in his father's footsteps, and maybe they can make a little bit of noise. Couldn't agree with it more. What is legal for the government, but illegal for the citizenry, is tyranny. That's the definition by Thomas Jefferson. That's easily seen in print. Grab yourself a magazine that holds more than 10 rounds of ammunition that was produced between 1992 and 2002 during the assault weapons ban, and read it. It says, for law enforcement, restricted for law enforcement or military use only. Right there in print is tyranny. That which is legal for the government, but illegal for the citizenry, is tyranny. And we just heard it. It's exactly what it is. You go to the airport, you want to fly in a plane. Listen, if I buy an airline ticket, I'm not giving up any rights. There are no rights to give up. I can choose to waive a right and then reinvoke it. Such as this. If I were to be arrested by the police, I have the right to remain silent. I can choose to waive that right, but at any time I can choose to invoke it. I'm invoking my Fifth Amendment right as well. I can be up there on the stand testifying about something. And if at some point in time I decide, you know, I don't want to answer that particular question, I can invoke the Fifth Amendment. That's great. I don't invoke it across the entire board if something can help me out, but if something could potentially be used against me, I invoke it. And there's no judge in the land that can say, you know what? You haven't invoked it up to this point. You can't invoke it now. Now, there's been a very, very, very minute, you can count them on one hand, handful of judges which have tried that garbage at some time in the past, but it doesn't work. Not going to happen. Coming up later in the show, what we're going to do in segments 3 and 4, there's 5 segments altogether, we're in segment 2, the next segment and the following segment, I'm going to play for you a piece by JFPO detailing the Second Amendment, the history of the Second Amendment, and the true meaning of the Second Amendment. This should be a wonderful education for everyone, especially those who would look at the Second Amendment today, 2010, and read it and say something along the lines, and we hear this a lot, it's ridiculous. Well, it says something about the militia. So the National Guard is a militia. Those are the only ones who get to have guns. There was no National Guard back in 1791 when the Bill of Rights was written. There wasn't. However, the citizens' militia had been around in the colonies here, later the United States, for over 150 years. There was no standing army. Matter of fact, in the Constitution, it says not to have a large standing army because the people wouldn't want to be overrun by the government's army. You know what it takes to suspend habeas corpus? The president signing a sheet of paper that says, I'm hereby temporarily suspending habeas corpus. Now the military can operate on American soil right here in the United States. That's all it takes. So, the Second Amendment is there to defend us. It's there to allow us to defend ourselves as a God-given, unalienable right that the government cannot control. Many in the government, many outside, would have you believe otherwise. So, when we come back, we're going to play that piece. So stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in live right here on 2A Radio. RoninTactical.com has certified concealed carry training specialists that travel to you and your group of self-protection advocates. Organize a group of friends, family, or co-workers who take their responsibility of self-protection seriously, and RoninTactical.com will send out a certified training specialist who will provide a course of instruction that will get you and your group certified to carry concealed in over 30 states while providing you, the organizer, a commission for organizing the event. Do you travel for work, family, or vacation and want to remain armed and safe when traveling? Contact RoninTactical.com for details on staying home and having one of our certified professionals travel to you to provide the training and credentials for you and your group to safely and legally carry concealed in over 30 states. Call 888-416-4809 or go online to RoninTactical.com.
Tell everyone in the room to pipe down. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
As promised, here's the piece by JFPL on the Second Amendment.
December 15th, 1791. The first 10 amendments to the U.S. Constitution, the Bill of Rights, was ratified by the states. The Great American Experiment was underway. The notion that people would govern themselves was unprecedented. There were no models, no examples to choose from. For the first time, men enacted into law human rights, not just government-given rights. The authors deemed those rights so important, they made a provision to protect those rights so they could never be taken away. The Second Amendment.
A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed.
One man with a gun can control 100 without one.
Vladimir Lenin.
Political power grows out of the barrel of a gun.
Mao Zedong.
History teaches that all conquerors who have allowed their subject races to carry arms prepared their own downfall.
Adolf Hitler.
Time and time again, history replays itself. Unarmed civilizations fall prey to tyrannical leaders. To ensure the balance of power remains in the hands of the people, the framers of the Second Amendment crafted 27 words. One sentence. To succinctly and definitively protect our freedoms from controlling political groups, oppressive religious organizations, or from an abusive government. None of those carefully chosen 27 words are unusual. The sentence is straightforward and crystal clear. There is no mention of limitations or restrictions on the type of arms citizens can carry. There is no mention of gun control. No distinction between sporting use and military use. No language regarding handguns, shotguns, rifles, or even weaponry not yet imagined. What the authors of the Second Amendment did specify is the right of the people, not privilege, to keep and bear arms. Yet, for more than 200 years, those 27 words and their intended meaning have been debated. What's the debate? We, the people, will decide. Here are six facts every American must know about the Second Amendment, often referred to as 2A. Fact number one. The framers of the Bill of Rights believed in God. They fought for the freedom from religious persecution. They believe the right to self-defense is a fundamental God-given right that existed long before the creation of any government. In fact, written documents pertaining to self-preservation predate the Second Amendment by thousands of years. Reference to the right to freedom from violent harm and the right to self-defense is found in the Torah and Christian Bible in Exodus 22, verse 2. In Jewish law, the Talmud states, if someone comes to kill you, arise quickly and kill him. Roman Catholic doctrine has long asserted,
someone who defends his life is not guilty of murder, even if he is forced to deal his aggressor a lethal blow.
Protestant theologian Samuel Rutherford writes in his 1644 publication, Lex Rex,
because no king or civil power can take away nature's birthright of self-defense from any man or a community of men.
Even the Declaration of Independence, written 15 years before the Second Amendment was ratified, clearly states,
all human beings are endowed with certain unalienable rights, and that governments are created to protect those rights.
So, what exactly is an unalienable right? A right that cannot be transferred or taken away. Fact number two.
The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
The language of the Second Amendment prohibits the federal government from infringing on the rights of the people. As clear as the First Amendment's language of prohibiting Congress from infringing on the right of the people to religious expression, freedom of speech, and freedom of the press, the Second Amendment is also clearly a protector of rights. Former Texas legislator Dr. Susanna Hupp knows infringement firsthand. Her parents were brutally gunned down in a Texas cafeteria by a lone gunman.
Reported subject shot 15 shots into the...
The only thing that the gun laws did that day in Texas was keep people like me from being able to protect myself and my family.
Due to a Texas state law prohibiting the carrying of firearms, the handgun that may have saved her parents' lives remained in her car.
As odd as this may sound to you, I wasn't angry at the madman that did this. But I was mad as hell at my legislators because they had legislated me out of the right to protect myself and my family.
Fact number three.
A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state.
The Second Amendment refers to a well-regulated militia. The right of the people to form citizen militias was unquestioned by the founders. Alexander Hamilton, in the Federalist Papers number 28, expressed,
"When a government betrays the people by amassing too much power and becoming tyrannical, the people have no choice but to exercise their original right of self-defense, to fight the government."
In the Federalist Papers number 46, James Madison, the father of the Bill of Rights, argues,
"The ultimate authority resides in the people. And that if the federal government got too powerful and overstepped its authority, then the people would develop plans of resistance and resort to arms."
Some interpret today's National Guard as the well-regulated militia. But the founders opposed anything but a small national military.
There are some people that think that that phrase in the Second Amendment has an entirely different meaning.
The phrase well-regulated refers to a well-trained, prepared, and disciplined citizens' militia.
They seem to think that it means just the state National Guard, and they don't know their history. That's just not true.
The phrase was in common use in 1791 and for more than a century afterwards. The Oxford English Dictionary from that time period defines well-regulated as something that was calibrated correctly, functioning as expected. Fact number four.
A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people.
Further evidence that a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state does not refer to the National Guard is supported by recent research. The writing style of the late 18th century legal documents typically began with a preamble. The purpose of the preamble was to state a purpose, not a limitation. New Hampshire's Constitution, written in 1784, begins with a preamble. "The liberty of the press is essential to the security of freedom in a state. It ought therefore to be inviolably preserved." The Constitution has a preamble.
"We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic trade."
The Bill of Rights has a preamble.
"The conventions of a number of the states, having at the time of their adopting the Constitution, expressed a desire in order to prevent misconstruction or abuse of its powers, that further declaratory and restrictive clauses should be added."
Since a preamble states a purpose,
a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people.
The well-regulated militia only reinforces the importance of the individual right to keep and carry arms.
The Second Amendment, when it really comes down to it, I believe it has two primary meanings. One is the obvious ability for me to be able to protect myself and my family from bad guys. But there's another meaning that the founders put in place that I think is absolutely vital to our way of life in this country. It's the ability for all of us out here to be able to protect ourselves from a government that could become tyrannical.
Fact number five. Before the war between the states, some states enacted laws that made it illegal for slaves and freed African Americans to possess firearms. In the infamous Dred Scott case, The Supreme Court ruled in 1857 that people of African ancestry could not claim U.S. citizenship, essentially taking away the right of African Americans to own a gun. In truth, armed slaves would be able to retaliate against their owners. Ironically, even though the framers of the Second Amendment feared becoming slaves to their government, some were tragically willing to permit slavery. Now that slavery is abolished, all citizens of all races should enjoy the Second Amendment's legal protection. Fact number 6. Over the past 60 years, the interpretation of the term well-regulated militia has come under fire from the Federal Circuit Courts of Appeal and many lower court judges. Those judges have wrongly ruled that the right to keep and bear arms doesn't apply to individuals, but have wrongly interpreted militia to mean the National Guard. But the words well-regulated militia had a far different meaning at the time the Second Amendment was written. In today's world, well-regulated is associated with intense government regulation. At the time the Second Amendment was drafted, the term didn't need to be defined. Colonial militias had been in existence for 150 years. With the exception of millers, ferrymen, and slaves, every adult male was required to join. It was your duty to report for service 4 to 6 times a year. You were required to have your own musket, bayonet, ammunition, and knapsack. If you were unable to supply your own firearm, the militia would provide you with one. Militias were well organized, well regulated, with the men reporting to an appointed captain. Not only did you have the right to own a firearm, it was your duty. Although the Constitution gave Congress the power to raise and support a temporary army, the framers feared a standing army after the Revolutionary War. The overriding purpose of the Second Amendment in guaranteeing the right of the people to keep and bear arms was to maintain a check on the standing army. A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, meant ultimate power must be in the hands of the people. The Second Amendment is very specific about this. It is the right of the people, not the states, to keep and bear arms. Recently, the Supreme Court confirmed this view in the District of Columbia versus Heller, finding the right to keep and bear arms an individual right held by the people, not a collective right, as it's been interpreted previously. The court concluded,
Americans have an individual right to possess a firearm unconnected with service in a militia, and to use that arm for traditionally lawful purposes, such as self-defense within the home.
Without a doubt, the Supreme Court decision is a victory. Portions of the court document affirm the facts. The individual right to self-defense. Individual rights shall not be infringed. The correct interpretation of a well-regulated militia. But other portions of that same court document contradict the facts.
Like most rights, the Second Amendment is not unlimited. It is not a right to keep and carry any weapon whatsoever, in any manner whatsoever, and for whatever purpose.
Clearly, the controversy is not over. The decision speaks from both sides of the mouth and leaves the door wide open to misinterpretation.
I think it opens it up for all kinds of regulations and registrations of guns that I think do not bode well for the future of the Second Amendment.
Lower courts are likely to interpret the doublespeak and uphold prohibitions on carrying concealed weapons. Lower courts are likely to interpret the doublespeak and uphold laws imposing conditions and restrictions on the sale of firearms. Lower courts are likely to interpret the doublespeak
and uphold bans on dangerous and unusual weapons, which could include any weapon the court wants it to be. The debate over the Second Amendment is far from over. Ultimately, we, the people, must decide what's more important, our unalienable rights, or what the Supreme Court decides are our rights. So what is it every American should know? Gun control laws have been in existence for hundreds of years. Gun control infringes on individual rights that have been in existence for thousands of years. Gun control is necessary when one group of people wants to control or dominate another group of people. Gun control is usually popularized by myth.
You know, we constantly hear these myths about gun control out there. There's a myth that gun control saves lives. I'm a perfect example of the fact that that isn't true. There's a myth that we'd be safer with fewer guns. We have to have guns in the right hands. There's a myth that countries with gun control laws have lower crime. There's a myth that carrying concealed weapons leads to higher crime and accident rates. It's not true. And registering guns, in my opinion, it's always the precursor to confiscation, which means that I can't protect myself or my family.
There is much evidence that proves more guns in the hands of more law-abiding citizens actually deters crime and lowers the homicide rate. Registering guns does little to keep guns out of the hands of criminals. Many cities with the strictest gun control laws often have the highest crime rate per capita. When criminals have guns and law-abiding citizens are disarmed, who are the gun control laws really protecting?
It's about rights, and as long as you are exercising your right in a responsible manner, I don't think we should be placing regulations upon how you exercise that right.
We the people have the unalienable self-right to defend and protect ourselves. We the people have the unalienable individual right to pick up arms to secure a free state. We the people have the unalienable right to possess and own any weapon we choose. From muskets to military-style weapons, the Second Amendment protects that right.
One of the great things about the ability to keep and bear arms is that ultimately, as long as we have that ability, ultimately the people will have the power and make the decisions.
You and 2A. Good for the USA.
Keep the fire. If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check, which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back up, I'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong if this is not when you belong.
All right, everybody. It is Friday. I want to thank everybody for having been tuned in throughout the week. It's been a week like every other. There's a lot of fighting to try to retain our rights, whether it's our First Amendment rights, whether it's our Second Amendment rights, whether it's the states fighting with the federal government over their 10th Amendment rights. It's a constant battle. We never seem to get away from it. And here's the thing that really seems to hold true. We have people in legislative authority, whether it's from your local town, all the way up to and including the entire Congress, both houses, the House and the Senate. And we have people in those positions of authority when it comes to legislative creation that aren't really too concerned about your rights. Unfortunately, they are not referring to the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution, the federal Constitution. And at the state level and below, they're not referring to the Constitution of that state. And they're just randomly passing all this legislation, a lot of which inhibits your rights and mine. Then we end up with an executive branch, be that from the president down into the law enforcement and police ranks, to where they now begin to enforce this legislation, which is otherwise unconstitutional. Until someone gets arrested and fights on its constitutional authority, by spending a lot of money with somebody other than a court-appointed judge, I'm sorry, court-appointed attorney, then we end up having problems where we have to try to find things to be unconstitutional. Then, that doesn't necessarily mean that the legislative branch will repeal anything, rewrite anything, or the executive branch will ever enforce things differently. We need to fight at the legislative battle. We need to fight at that level first. That's our primary battleground. The legislative battlegrounds. We need to essentially replace anybody and everybody who has a voting record that would subvert your rights, which quite honestly, folks, is probably 90%+ of those people from a town, city, county, state, and federal level, which are elected to do such things. You need to get in touch with the people who are elected officials who are also elected into the executive branch, such as city attorneys, district attorneys, attorney generals of your states, and let them know that you'll be fighting and fighting hard to make sure that unconstitutional laws that are already on the books come off of the books, and we no longer have to deal with them. It's up to them not to enforce unconstitutional laws. Thanks for spending your week here.
I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you, in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillKarns.com. Send your comments to Bill at 2aradio.com.